Let us now move on to, sorry, yeah, 1198, please.
Improve land use regulations through the accessory structure zoning code update project.
Okay, so we had a hearing on this. There were some proposed amendments. I wanted to get those on the table and then get staff a chance to confer with us and see if there's anyone who wants to speak on the amendments. Okay, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. And what I'd like to propose is that we put the amendment, my amendment, on the table and then perhaps defer to another hearing on it since it's fairly last minute. It was worked out with in conjunction with your staff. I know that there's a lot more people who are going to be interested in this issue, both pro and con, than are able to be here today. And so I'm passing out my amendment, which is to to not allow accessory dwelling units in the 5-foot setback in single-family zones. And I'd like to speak to the amendment.
I'll second it.
Thank you very much. Forgot that small detail. I also handed to you the definition of the purpose of setbacks, which is in 33.110.220. This is for single-family zones. The setback regulations for buildings and garage entrances serve several purposes. They maintain light, air, separation for fire protection, and access for firefighting. They reflect the general building scale and placement of houses in the city's neighborhood, and they promote reasonable physical relationship between residences. So those are the first three. There are several other bullets. In all of when I'm making decisions on the council and elsewhere, I think about what would I like this if it was going to happen to me. And so when I think about what was proposed in allowing accessory dwelling units, the wall could be 10 foot high, 24 feet long, right on the property line, on the sides of my property, it would be particularly challenging in my situation because the lots behind me, the lot line, is in the center of my back property line. So in fact, although it says that each property can only have a 24-foot limitation, I could have two of them sat right next to each other for 48 feet of a 10-foot blank wall right on my property line. Since I live on a slope, it would actually be higher than 10 feet because the properties behind me are at least 5 foot higher than mine. I could then have another one to this on the other sideline of my property that would be kitty corner with the 48-foot wall and have another 24-foot blank wall, again, 5 foot higher than my backyard. And that would significantly impede on the light, air, and separation of my property, of my home, and my ability to enjoy my property, not to mention the fact that the owners of the accessory dwelling units would have to access my property to paint the blank walls and otherwise maintain them. So that's why one of the reasons that I'm proposing this amendment. We've heard already from advocates that one of the reasons for allowing smaller accessory dwelling units in setbacks is to encourage new accessory dwelling units to be smaller. My contention is if we want accessory dwelling units to be smaller, we should require them to be smaller in all situations. Commissioner Novick has brought up the issue that since we first did the accessory dwelling unit regulations back when I was on the Planning Commission, we have changed the regulations for and allowed Airbnbs and other short-term rentals to be in accessory dwelling units. So there's a big incentive for homeowners to build accessory dwelling units not as rentals or low-cost living for relatives, but for commercial enterprises. And so this proposed amendment, allowing them to be right on the neighbor's property line, I think severely impinges on the property rights of the adjacent neighbors. And while we've heard a lot of support from those who want to do accessory dwelling units, I haven't heard any concerns or support from those who are just fine with having these structures right on their property line. So that's the reason for my amendment.
Okay, thank you. So further discussion about that, and then
I would like to, and I appreciate Commissioner Fritz coming by and visiting with me about this amendment yesterday, but and certainly contemplated it, but I was also struck this morning by an email I think we all received from two members of the Planning Sustainability Commission, Mike Houck and Chris Smith, who spoke against this amendment because they really feel that, you know, and I think we all feel this, there is an affordable housing crisis in this city right now, and we are sort of slowly putting the nail in the coffin of accessory dwelling units, we, the city, and the county. We plan to have our SDC waivers expire next year. The county has an interpretation on reassessments of property values when somebody builds an ADU that significantly increases people's property taxes. And I think this amendment is only going to make, by requiring going through an adjustment committee, one more, as I said, nail in the coffin of a viable option that's not being used for all B&B, Airbnb purposes only. These are people living, older relatives, housing aging parents, housing siblings who haven't made it on their own yet. So I think there's a lot of valid uses for ADU, and we're slowly killing them off. So I respectfully will oppose this amendment when we vote on it.
Yeah, I want to get the staff up to react to it as well, and I know there's some folks that want to testify. I was initially pretty favorable to this, but listening to what I've heard from members of the advisory committee and from planning commission members, I think our staff and the task force that worked on this might have gotten it right in the first place. So it's always good for us to listen carefully to what our professional staff say, so I want to invite Phil. And
Mayor, can I just ask a process question? Because we are a little pressed for time. Was it the sponsor's request that we vote on the underlying matter and continue this to another hearing?
Let's see. We have a few people here that want to speak. We might want to have a conversation. I would with our professional staff, Sandra and Phil in particular, and see what our thoughts are about this one discrete issue. I think my sense of the council was we were pretty much ready to move forward on the rest of this, except for this issue. We've got to resolve this issue in one way or the other. But I didn't hear a lot of other issues within this package that needed further discussion. So, again, I'd like to hear from Sandra and Phil their response to the suggested amendment. And then I know there's some people here that would like to testify on the amendment. And that shouldn't actually, looking at the size of the group here today, probably take that long. So,
Mayor, the issue is that's been raised by those opposing my amendment is that the proposal as is incents the smaller accessory dwelling units. And so it raises the underlying concern as we're amending all covered and covered structures. Have we in fact allowed accessory dwelling units to be too large on the rest of the lot?
Well, they've thought about this, so come on up, please. We'll put them on the hot seat. I thought about this from a personal standpoint as somebody who has a garage on my property line. And that garage is within about a foot of the property line. So a long time ago, someone, probably my neighbor, planted a hedge next to it. So it's not terribly visible. I understand the side effect of this is that if someone were to build an ADU right on the property line, it would create the potential visual problem for the neighbor. So, how did you address that issue as you talked about it with the task force?
So, Phil Nabany with the City of Portland, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and just for the folks in the audience too, I want to reiterate that Commissioner Fritz's amendment is only four words, so it's putting from a code standpoint, it's a fairly simple fix, but it does have some implications. And as we were talking to our focus group and as we've taken this out to the public and continued to receive calls and emails, I would say the idea of using this provision for ADUs is probably the most anticipated change or provision that is being most anticipated by folks out there, property owners and architects and so on. I think there is possibly a pent-up demand to potentially build smaller units and take advantage of the provision to put them in the setbacks. I think from a focus group standpoint, this was discussed quite a bit. We did start at the very beginning with the idea of do we decide to not allow any structures in the setback, or do we decide to, which would swing the pendulum the other way, or do we go ahead and look at creating a little more flexibility? The concern with swinging it the other way was that potentially would result in a greater policy shift than the way our code has been heading over the last 30 years. And especially since about 10, 12 years ago, we did allow the ability for somebody to convert a garage into another type of accessory structure. The issue with that is, of course, oftentimes older garages, from a building standpoint, can't really be converted. But there's a desire to maybe use those same kind of footprints to be able to build a different type of accessory structure. The one thing I want to mention with Commissioner Fritz's concern is I think it may bring up the bigger issue, because if the issue is too many blank walls along the property line, there could be three garages. You know, if Commissioner Fritz lives in an R7, R5, or R25 neighborhood, there could be three garages on those property lines, and it'd be the same issue with the blank wall. Our thought was that with some of these provisions to, you know, require potentially screening of if the structure is, say, a covered patio and require screening from a visual standpoint, and or to limit the amount of windows or openings, that would help with some of the privacy issues.
The homes already have garages, so there's no financial incentive to put another garage in the backyard. There is a financial incentive to have an accessory dwelling unit. That's why they're different.
Well, if the house doesn't have a garage, there might be an incentive to have a garage, or if it burns down.
Well, that's why I was originally saying, if we want to unify the code, then let's not have the garages there either. I was persuaded by staff who helped craft this amendment that making it more narrow to accessory dwelling units, which are defined as having a sleeping area, a bathroom, and a kitchen, that would still allow people to have, in limited situations, to do the garage. And plus, it wouldn't make the garages nonconforming that are there now.
So I have a couple of concerns. One is that this is a very complicated issue, and that the issue that Commissioner Fritz is raising, I think, is important. I'm not sure I'm comfortable jamming it in the context of the work that's already been done, which is why I thought her original proposal to move forward with the adoption and continue her amendment. For example, I haven't had the benefit of an extensive briefing the way Dan has. I'd like to understand the issue better. And also, I have an interest in having a deeper understanding of what we know about accessory dwelling units generally. I know that when we, as a council, waived the systems development charges, we did so because they were being built largely outside of our review and our code. And so the thought was, waive the SDCs, and people will come in and actually file for permits. They'll be regulated. We'll have a chance to make sure they're safer and they are built to code. I have my own anecdotal sense about what's happening with ADUs, and it's along the lines of the unintended consequences that we unleashed when we welcomed short-term rentals into our community. We've monetized spaces that actually, Dan, used to be available for affordable housing, and we have greatly contributed to the crisis in our community by giving people financial incentive to do short-term rentals over long-term rentals, and it isn't as if we had a lot of capacity to begin with. So to me, it's a complicated question that goes beyond the issue of the placement of the structure and the noise and impact, although I'm acutely sensitive to that. There's a larger policy question, and Mayor, we can have a vote on this today, but I think the offer to continue the amendment and adopt the underlying ordinance actually made sense, so that if the council so chooses, we can go deeper into this issue.
Okay. That's one option.
I would say I agree with that. My initial off-the-cuff knee-jerk response to Commissioner Fritz's amendment was to support it, and normally I can rely on my knees and my cuffs, but not always, and given that we've had communications from people whose views I generally respect about this issue, I would like to further time to think about it. So I would concur.
You're comfortable with adopting the proposal now and then further addressing Commissioner Fritz's proposal later? Is
that doesn't
saying?
Make any sense to me.
Well, that's what Commissioner Fritz just articulated, I think, that you would like to act on the proposal in front of us.
I'm asking to amend the proposal, but my request at the beginning of this session was that we would just put the amendment on the table, perhaps take testimony, but not even act on the amendment until we've had more input to hold the record open.
Well, right, but that's different.
How does that leave the underlying ordinance?
Well, it doesn't have to be adopted today. There's no urgency to adopt the underlying ordinance.
But maybe I misunderstood. What's the harm in adopting the ordinance and continuing the amendment and then deciding whether we subsequently want to amend the ordinance? procedurally, if there's no controversy on the bulk of what we have, why don't we?
There is a bit of an issue with the idea of opening a floodgate. So the idea is adopting the amendment would allow the ADUs to be built right up to the property line.
Right. My sense
so
is
then
that
we'd be having to scale back with.
Right. If you adopt the underlying ordinance, you're basically rejecting my amendment. So then everybody and their brother puts in their applications tomorrow, right. And all of those are allowed.
Because you are a leader in guiding us through these kinds of issues, typically, my sense is the council might reject your amendment because they either don't understand it or don't understand its consequences. And so that, and if you would like to proceed to a vote, my guess is it's voted down for that reason. If there's some way to decouple, it seems to me we can have a broader discussion about it.
I don't understand why folks are wanting to vote on the underlying ordinance. Whenever we have code changes coming to us and there's some question about one piece of it, we just continue the hearing until we can vote on the whole thing. I've never been asked to vote on the underlying ordinance without having a robust discussion of the amendment.
Is there any harm to our process to continue this to have further discussions on the amendment? Are we up against I don't want to say up against the lot line, but
no.
Are we up against a deadline that requires us to act?
No, we didn't propose that this be an emergency ordinance. We fully understood that there'd be a 30-day period before it was effective. The only pressure that sort of gets applied is the fact that there's a window of opportunity between when this becomes effective and when potentially the system development charges get reapplied. But that is not a week window. It's 7 months. So, I mean, it's there really isn't an issue with delaying this a week or 2 weeks.
Mayor, what if we took testimony and then continued it at least a week for the purpose of Commissioner Fritz's colleagues having further discussion?
Yeah, at the very least, we ought to hear testimony
today. I'm sorry, I misunderstood the
really
promotion.
Okay, so other questions for staff, and then we will take testimony.
Just remind us again, so we had a task force that looked at this package, mm-hmm. and it also went through the Planning and Sustainability Commission? Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. Yeah, the task force met from January until about April, and then we also had some outreach with the district coalitions and went through, there was a residential infill design expo that happened in Northeast Portland that was attended by probably several hundred folks that we had a booth at. And then once we released the discussion draft, we had the standard public process of notification and going to hearing.
Thanks.
All right. Other questions for either planning or BDS staff? Thank you.
So one clarification that I'd like to make is after you take testimony today, if you could clarify if testimony is closed at the end of testimony
Good
or
point.
If you're holding it open for another week.
All right. Thank you. We'll get that clear.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. So let's see who'd like to testify on the amendment. So come on up, and if you haven't already signed up, that's fine. But if you'd like to speak on the proposed amendment, come on up.
And as they're coming up, colleagues, I'll note that we've got three emergency ordinances for parks that really need to get done today, and another two
okay.
we have to leave.
Okay. Yes. Get to those. We might have to get to them in the afternoon, but we'll get to them. Okay. Good afternoon. Good morning.
Oh, is there – I give some handouts there?
I think we – I have a
Oh, you have them in front of you. Wonderful. Okay. My name is Eli Spivak, and I was part of the focus group. And the first ADU I developed in Portland was in the Sabin neighborhood. It was a corner garage that was had been so for about a decade, and I converted it to a livable accessory dwelling unit, sold for $117,000 in a neighborhood where everything else was about three times that. With the proposed amendment, you couldn't do that anymore. It provided a form of affordable housing in the Sabin neighborhood, and even 7 years have passed, that unit has turned over once or twice, and it continues to be half to a third the cost of any other home in that neighborhood. For rentals, it's a little bit different scheme, but it's very similar. They provide affordable housing options in neighborhoods that have very few choices. We really do have a housing crisis, and we need to have little houses have to be part of the toolbox for that. And I want to share that the Oregon DEQ, and that's why I have this little handout for you, there's not much data out there about how ADUs are used, but they did a study 2 years ago. It's not ancient history. Showing, because they wanted to know if they're going to support ADUs, how are they actually used? Are they really used to house people? You know, that makes a difference. And they found that nearly 80% of them are used as long-term residences and 4.5% short-term housing. Now, I know 2 years have passed. You know, short-term housing has grown. ADUs have grown. But it's a fallacy to think that just because those have both grown, that therefore ADUs are all being used as Airbnb. I mean, people have a reason to advertise that they have an Airbnb if they want people to rent them. But most ADUs are almost certainly used for long-term housing options. And we need those choices in a housing crisis.
Eli, in fairness, we actually don't know the answer to that question. So and we have two problems here. One is that you are not the typical developer. Mm-hmm. So we have to put an asterisk every time you testify. You are not typical. The kinds of co-housing things you advocate for, the kinds of affordable housing options, all the things that you come before us are not typical of your peer group. And I say that as a compliment. And second, 2 years ago, short-term rentals were not legal in our community. And there are thousands of units listed now online, the bulk of them illegal. And we have no way of knowing. We cannot document it. So I appreciate, from a philosophical point of view, your conviction around this, but we simply don't know. And furthermore, in my neighborhood, little houses are not being fixed up to be made affordable. They're being demolished and replaced with big houses that no one can afford. So respectfully, I don't think we have the data to make the judgment that you've just made about the impact on these little houses.
I agree we don't have the data. I wish we had the data. I mean, I totally agree.
We had more of you. But you are not typical of the people that we're dealing with in this market.
Mm-hmm. So this was a DEQ report that's 2 years
old. Right, and Jordan Baumery, who did the report, would have been here if he could have been. He was in Salem.
And that 2 years ago, 4.5% of the ADUs were used for short-term rental.
Yeah. And the other data on it is,
even if it quadrupled in the last 2 years, we're still talking about less than 20% of ADUs being used for short-term rentals.
Yeah. I mean, I think Fish is right that we don't know the information, what's happened in those 2 years. Obviously, things have changed. But I think it's a jump to conclusion to assume that they're mostly short-term rental.
We also had another problem that Dan is well aware of, which is most of the ADUs were illegal. So I don't know how we can do a survey of ADUs when the bulk of them were built without people actually bothering to get a permit. So I don't know what the universe we looked at.
I'm sure that's true.
Well,
2 years ago was 4 years after the SEC waiver was first put in place.
And they
were surveyed based on legal ADUs. So I don't know what
legal ADUs. And at the time we waived the SDCs, we were told there was rampant. We had basically the bulk of the ADUs were not legal. That is, they did not go through our code process, which is the reason we went to a rather extraordinary step of waiving SDCs.
Can I say one more? On the second page of this, I just want to share one more tidbit, is that a lot of ADUs are rented for nothing. And this is a study, and it's and this rings true, I think, for the experiences I've heard of, where people are letting ADUs be used by friends, relatives, someone else who will be paying rent in another situation. Almost 20% of them rented for zero, or like $500 a month. And we need stuff like that. That's affordable housing, unsubsidized in any ongoing way by government, for small units where household sizes tend to be small. We're sharing some anecdotes, probably have nothing involved with a good friend. I mean, she housed her grandma, 80-year-old, for her last years of life in a converted garage right next to a property line across from New Seasons in Northeast Portland. And I don't know, I know it was close to the property line, I don't know if it was legally made as an ADU, but there's an accessible small unit for someone can live in. And that's the type of housing that we just don't have much in our single family. We have neighborhoods that are at risk of becoming only affordable to millionaires, and these are the kind of housing we need more of in a housing crisis.
So Eli, we're not going to be taking up the SDC issue today, but at some point, I would love to have your thoughts about, as we're considering sunsetting the SDC waiver, as to whether you think we should only sunset it on those units where the owner is willing to make the unit affordable. And is there some way to link those two?
Well, the other option there might be to have the SDC waiver. We've had trouble, and Sandra and Phil were explaining to me, we had trouble in the past with regulations that were incenting people to do a workaround. This is just an office. It's not really a housing unit. Mm-hmm. And they were even carrying out sink agreements about whether or not you're installing a sink. You know, it got crazy and convoluted. But there maybe is a simple tool, like you've just described, that could focus the waiver on what we want and not on what we don't want.
And then we could have a mechanism for tracking it, because
one way we could do that would be to say it's only waived for units that are not short-term rentals. And then it's obvious if you check the websites whether a unit is a short-term rental or not, and the owner might be liable for paying that STC in the first 5 or 10 years or whatever we want to do. So I think we have options. I'm just trying to riff off your suggestion.
Yeah,
there are a couple of different ways to do that.
Well, I'd be happy to be part of a discussion on
incentivize the kind of housing he's talking about.
Yeah.
And providing some predictability around the waiver, whatever it is, I think would help a lot because there's a lot of unpredictability in the world of small homes right now.
Yeah. Okay.
So thank you. I think one other thing in that survey that I was going to bring up was that the biggest obstacles to ADU development were cost and design compatibility requirements. And I think this code update does some things elsewhere in the update to provide uniform requirements on compatibility. So tall accessory structures would have to be compatible also, not just if they're an accessory dwelling unit. And in terms of cost, the least expensive ADUs to do are internal conversions and small one-story structures. And I think this opens the door to some of those that are allowed already if you're going to be housing a car. But we have more people on the streets, and we need to provide housing for people, too. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks.
What's your name back in the record?
My name is Cole Peterson. Do a lot of advocacy, education, policy work around ADUs, run the citywide ADU tour, teach classes for homeowners. I've taught 600-plus homeowners full-day classes in ADU development, teach realtor classes for ADUs. I'm really passionate about ADUs for a lot of the reasons that I'm passionate about the housing in better, more affordable, more efficient, greener housing options in Portland. Commissioner Fritz's amendment effectively puts a damper on the ability for there to be an incentive to develop small 576 square foot ADUs or less. The concept that you mentioned regarding downsizing ADUs could be another consideration, I suppose. But I think what's really nifty about the proposal as it stands is economically every additional square foot you add to an ADU is a very small cost. So this is why when people demo a house and rebuild something, they build the maximum possible size. There's a minimum fixed cost for any unit of development, roughly $60,000 to $70,000. So every additional square foot you add is a relatively low marginal cost. Therefore, people are incentivized economically to build the largest possible ADU they can. What this regulation does is says we are going to give you basically a regulatory incentive if you build a small one-story, which happens to be the form of ADU that would be most accessible to people with disabilities, which is a form of house that we need more of. It happens to incentivize also waiving the design code matching requirements if you build them small. Therefore, there's more flexibility in terms of being able to build ADUs that are cheaper because you don't have to do custom design for each and every unit. The amendment the unintentional consequences are that it incentivizes 800 square foot ADUs, which means that more ADUs will cost more and will have to be used more for income-generating properties, whereas right now, 20%, potentially greater, are used for no-cost rental for family members, for friends. It's a form of organic affordable housing that doesn't require government subsidy other than the STC waiver, which I would love to see extended. As Eli alluded to, the only data we really have about the Airbnb thing is 5% of them are being used for Airbnb or short-term rental as of 3 years ago. That number probably has increased, and I'm totally with the council in terms of thinking about being more diligent about enforcing the policy. I think it's a great policy that the city passed. I just think it needs to be enforced more. But I think coupling the Airbnb issue with ADUs isn't really a fair coupling to make. I don't think there's any stats that really back up what these hypotheses are. There's media and stories that have conflated ADUs and Airbnb, but the reality is a lot more are being used for affordable housing, and there's a lot of anecdotes to support that. You just have to go digging for them. And I, as somebody who speaks with and deals with probably more ADU owners than anybody else, I can tell you, Airbnb is used in some cases, but it's definitely not the majority. It's by far the minority. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Crystal.
Hello, good morning. My name is Crystal Lelinsky. I represent 10,000. I'm very privileged to be here. It is a pity to use up this precious time if it's not urgent, if you're not voting on it. And I should start with a couple questions. I don't really understand who's being affected here right now. Are there applications for building that are being put on hold because of this revamping of the zoning?
Well, there might be.
So it's not, there might be. So it's not urgent. You don't know of people that are right now struggling, trying to go forth with their applications to the city to build.
I think we'll hear from people today that can help answer that question. But go ahead, please.
So I guess that confirms to me that it seems like you still have a lot of, I feel like Dan Saltzman has a lot of homework to do. And since he's in charge of this, the zoning in the city is, it's a debacle. It's a catastrophe. Every time I turn around, and even in Parks and Recreation, to give away a former golf course where we had a biosphere, an entire green space in North Portland where I lived, and allow it to be used for industrial use. I understand the Portland Business Alliance says there's not enough industrial space in North Portland, but I know there's hordes of it. We need to put the money into the EPA. We need to fix our zoning so we can't just give away golf courses as industrial land in exchange for a small little park along the Columbia Slough. That was a lot. I know in the past that Dan Saltzman has expressed concern with zoning rules being thrown haphazardly, and he even said so to the colleague of yours, Randy Leonard, who within a week had a neon rose up on a historical, beautiful historical building on the river, and they made exceptions for him. So it seems to me this is all very important, but I don't trust your zoning rules in general. And I'm saying this is quaint to hear you all talk like, oh, my house. I'm coming from the perspective of somebody who has traversed the city due to displacement, thanks to the housing authority mostly. But before that, I was a slumlord recipient, victim. And I've been all over the city. And when I see people building haphazardly and not protecting their environment, not asking their neighbors, that's what we should do, is get neighborhoods involved, think this thing clearly through. To add amendments like this are very logical, but I think there's a lot more here. And having been at, like, for example, your housing meeting, Mayor Hales, on MLK to give $10 million or $20 million for low-income housing, and it ends up going into a big four-story Tyvek particle board condom complex that no one can afford. And everybody in that room stood up and said, we want small houses. We want these. We want to be able to rent to our family. We want to be able to stay in our neighborhood and rent to others. It's huge. And this is coming from the perspective of people that don't own their own quaint little land.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Let's hear from some more folks who are here to speak this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Annie Rose Shapiro. I'm a realtor with Urban Nest Realty and also a homeowner and the owner of a rental property. I've been in Portland for 13 years. I have a lot of clients who are interested in buying ADUs and building ADUs. So anecdotally, I can speak to the interest. People want to take care of their families. And I think we need to do everything we can to support ADUs. And the proposal as is does support the build of more ADUs. Smaller ADUs are more environmental. That's the bottom line. The smaller you go, the greener you are. And we need to do everything we can to support that. But also, ADUs of all sizes provide a safety net for our community that can be provided by our community. No owner of an apartment building, no property manager is ever going to let your brother stay in an apartment because he lost his job. they're going to say, hey, have fun in your Toyota Corolla on Burnside. And I think we need to do everything we can to empower our community to provide this safety net. Now, somebody uses it for Airbnb sometimes. That doesn't mean when their brother falls on hard luck, they're not going to open their doors to them. And we need to make use of this resource and trust our community to do the right thing. And it's also about putting who do we want to have control of our rental market? Who do we want to benefit from rentals? Do we want it to be large corporations? They have a role in our community, but by incentivizing ADUs in every way possible, we put this money and this income and these choices into the hands of the little people, the residents of Portland, Oregon, who live here, who contribute to this economy. And if they're using their rental for Airbnb, they're turning that money and putting it right back into our local economy. And I don't think that's what usually happens. And I think most of the time, or often what it can be, is it's a mix. If people are using Airbnb, they're also reserving it for when their mother gets old and she needs to have somewhere to live. It's a short term, it's a combination. And we need to empower the people of Portland to have control of our rental market because it's getting out of hand. I think that's it.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Liz Getty. I'm also a local realtor, and I work for Urban Nest. I really have three quick points. The first one I want to point out is I believe it was Mr. Fish that complimented Eli on being a unique developer. I think one of the reasons that Eli is a unique developer is that the city makes it impossible for individuals to do their developments. ADUs are short-term rentals. They are also long-term rentals. They are solutions for people for income generation. They are solutions for affordable housing. If we open up this model, we can create actually infill, not upfill, communities, people that walk by each other, engage, and actually engage with their neighbors. When, and I'm shaking, because Fritz actually brought up the most important point by saying a wall against her neighbor. That's what we are creating when we build these buildings up and these hallways and this unaffordable city. And the people that are coming here are actually coming on the past belief that Portland is better than that. And we are. So when you say that you don't want a wall next to you, I think, well, if your zoning doesn't allow for it, then purchase that property. Have an R5 with one ADU available within the setbacks, built as needed. Know what you bought next to when you bought it so that you are buying something that you can use to your use. But we buy and purchase land, and many of us, it is the only thing we have to call home. And if you have to stay in your home by allowing others to come in and support you by creating a basement unit, or you use the $40,000 on a good year to help convert the garage into something that helps generate income for the city and affordable housing. The reason Eli is unique is because development of anything is difficult. And the ADU has been the option for the individual to create somewhat affordable development in Portland. And by taking away that, you take away opportunity that makes us what we are and why people are coming. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just to clarify, I'm not saying I love ADUs. I think they're great. For the last 30 years, we have had a certainty that there's a 5-foot setback. So what we're proposing to do is to change the rules.
Big setback for a city that's growing at this size, considering that San Francisco, Seattle, I mean, we watch other cities that have less setbacks, and they are still having growth issues. We do not have a solution for it. There is no opportunity for affordable right now for most people, and the developers have not gotten on board.
The issue is whether the affordable housing is placed within the setback. There's certainly still the opportunity for the homeowner to have a smaller unit in their space rather than impinging on the neighbor's
You're
space.
Telling my clients that just recently bought in the last 2 years a garage on their property line that's larger than 500 square feet can no longer be converted.
No, they can apply for an adjustment, which is...
They can apply for an adjustment. Heard,
hey.
We heard testimony last week about a woman who went through the adjustment process. It cost less than $2,000. She had a very good experience talking with her neighbors, came to a good conclusion. That would still be allowed under my amendment, just to clarify.
All right. Thank you. Good morning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I absolutely agree with Commissioner Fritz's amendment. One of the concerns I have is obviously when you get within these setbacks, too close wall to wall. I'm looking at it more from a safety concern, also a noise concern. I think that we still have enough room that we can develop a lot of ADUs. I think we still need that waiver on the SDCs to be extended. Pertaining to Airbnb, I don't think Airbnb is taking that much inventory out of the market currently. I know there's going to be more studies. I think a lot of the inventory that was out in the market was being rented illegally. I think that's being brought to the surface now. It's being taxed properly. I think more safety measures are being put into place. So, again, I do agree with Commissioner Fritz's position on this. And I'm looking at it more from a safety issue. And I think that if we extend this out a year and we monitor this, I think there's going to still be a lot of ADUs built. And again, if we extend that waiver out farther, I think that will continue. And then to look at it again, maybe 2 years, 3 years out, maybe make that change to allow within the setback. But at this time, I agree with the amendment that has been proposed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Anyone else want to speak on this item? Come on up.
Good morning. For the record, Charles Johnson. Obviously, given the number of people I've seen sleeping on Fifth Avenue, sleeping here on Southwest Fifth Avenue, just like on New York's Fifth Avenue, there is a need to get ADUs that are taking in low-income people. However, I do not have much pity for people who may have bought a house in the past 2 years with the idea that they could put an Airbnb unit within 1 inch of the lot line. These are two completely different situations. So I would encourage the delay on this, delay of income for people. You know, these units are not going to quickly materialize to be a massive assistance for the number of people sleeping on the streets. So I think that although there has been a report and a hearing committee, I think that there needs to be more public involvement to digest this idea of every homeowner in Portland now knowing that if you pass this today, any of their neighbors could build any size ADU right on the lot line, which if you pass it and then you change it, as Commissioner Fritz has pointed in, we have the question of will people be grandfathered? Will there be litigation, land use hearings? So please, perhaps some more due diligence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, anyone else? So what I would recommend that we do is I'm going to close the public hearing.
Could we leave it open, please? Because that
we'll probably leave it open for close the public hearing, but leave the record open for people to submit testimony.
I would suggest, Mayor, that there may be others who, after this debate becomes public today, might want to testify next time.
Well, we've had two public hearings, and we had a rather extensive process. I mean, there was a question about public process here.
Just written? That's what you'd like?
Sorry?
You'd hold the record open just for written testimony?
That's what I was thinking we would do. So if people want to write in about this issue between now and next week, we'll give them the opportunity to do that.
Could we compromise? I have a town hall coming up on the 30th, which is 2 weeks from here. If we could hold it over till after Thanksgiving, that way I can ask folks at the public hearing, I mean at the town hall, which is on November 30th at the Southeast Portland Community College. If I'm told everybody's fine with it, then I will be happy to support the proposal as proposed. I would just like that a little more time to have my own scoping of whether people agree with me or not.
So the morning of the 2nd is possibility. We have the parental leave policy.
But if we're not taking testimony, it doesn't need to be a time certain.
It could be a time certain for a vote.
Actually, if I may, I would recommend that this be set for a time certain.
Yeah. I want to set it for a time certain for a vote, and for among other reasons, because I'm going to be leaving the council at 11:30 myself that
right.
day. So my recommendation is we try to set it for 9:15 on the 2nd, 9:45. Sorry,
not
9:50. Well, it should start early. We know what's wrong with that. Okay. No, let's set it for 9:45 on the 2nd. So close the public hearing for testimony. Let people that want to correspond with us, we've gotten great letters and emails about this already. That will give people the chance to do more. We'll take a vote on Commissioner Fritz's amendment, and then we'll take a vote on the proposal and see where we stand.
Thank you.
Okay? So 9:45 on December 2nd. Please feel free to keep the cards and letters coming on the subject in the meantime and talk about it further at your forum. Okay. Thanks, everybody.